Now, on BBC Radio 4, the classic serial, we begin our two-part series, A Larkin Double. Philip Larkin is one of the most celebrated poets of the last century, but little is known of his career as a novelist. Soon after leaving Oxford, and still in his early 20s, Larkin wrote two novels. We begin with the first of these, in a new radio dramatisation by Robin Brooks.
Jill, by Philip Larkin. Dramatised for radio by Robin Brooks. John Kemp stands outside the porter's lodge. He has won a scholarship to reside at the university, but he is afraid.
Yes, sir?
I've just arrived. Can you... my rooms.
What, sir? What do you say? A fresher, are you?
Yes.
What name?
Kemp.
Kent?
Kemp.
Ah, Kemp, are you? Room 2, staircase 14, sharing with Mr. Warner. That's you, sir?
Where?
Founder's Quad, second arch on the left, staircase 14's on the right.
Thank you.
John Kemp is an undersized boy, 18 years old, with a pale face. He's been travelling all day. He is hungry and bewildered.
Hello?
More tea! Fill the kettle!
In a minute! Got a visitor! Did you want me?
I think my name's Kemp.
You're Kemp? Well, how do you do? I'm Chris Warner.
Oh, how do you do?
We're just having tea. You come from town?
From Huddersfield.
Oh, good journey?
Yes.
Well, come in and have some tea.
The room is a terrible mess, with dirty cups and plates littered about.
Friends, my roommate has arrived, Mr. Kemp. These are Elizabeth Dowling.
Hello.
And Patrick Dowling.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Kemp, have some cake. Take your coat off. Have a seat. Patrick, make some room.
It doesn't matter. I've been sitting down all day.
As he looks at each of them, they hurriedly look away.
Have you come a long way?
From Huddersfield.
Quite a distance.
Patrick grins openly at him. Why?
Hurry up, kettle.
Are they deliberately ignoring him? Laughing at him.
A cigarette, anyone?
But that's what it feels like.
Ugh, what an age. I'm dying for another cup.
You want a cup, Kemp?
Thanks. Do you know, rather funny thing. I think we both brought the same kind of china.
Oh, God! My dear fellow, these are your crocs. You must excuse us. I haven't any. I'm afraid we broke your crate open and gave your things a christening. I hope you don't mind.
Oh, I thought you'd never notice.
Isn't the exquisite way you brought the subject up, dear.
You don't mind, do you?
No.
Oh, haven't you got anything, Chris? You are awful. I spent days in Harrods making my mind up about patterns and colours and things.
I only brought glasses.
Trust you.
But you can use those, Kemp, of course.
Yes. Thanks.
His impulse is to run away. But there is nowhere to run to. They have to share the same bedroom. He has never done this before.
I've taken the further bed. Suppose that's all right?
Oh, yes.
I'm glad you met some of my friends. Elizabeth is Patrick's sister.
Yes.
I was at school with Patrick. Oh. That's a bore having to share, isn't it? You don't catch the dons sharing.
What are you going to read?
I'm supposed to be doing English.
Oh, so am I.
Then that's why we're together. Right, I'm going to the junior common room. A man told me you can get sherry there.
Alone at last, out of curiosity, he begins to inspect Warner's things. With the razor blades, he finds 4 contraceptives and feels as alarmed as if he has found a loaded revolver. On the shelf are a pile of notebooks.
Thus we see that in creating the character of Shylock, Shakespeare's original intention was deflected, and instead of a comic moneylender, he produced a figure of tragic significance.
The awareness that he himself has written something very like this gives John a strange thrill, part rivalry, part kinship. He goes to bed early and falls asleep sooner than he imagined.
What? Who is it?
Got to put on the light. Sorry. Sorry.
Could I... shall I turn out the light?
John's heart beats fast. He is afraid that Warner will rouse up again and come lurching over to him. When he does sleep, his dreams are full of pursuit and brutal attacks.
Warner? Wake up.
What's the time?
It's nearly breakfast time.
Thanks. I won't get up for breakfast.
Oh, sorry.
Do you think you could give me a glass of water?
Yes, of course.
Thanks. Did I cat last night?
I beg your pardon?
Or was I sick?
Yes, you were.
Yeah, I thought I should be. We got into a pub about 9:30. I got some pints. As soon as I had one mouthful, I said to Patrick, "This beer's piss." He agreed. If there's one thing that makes me cat, it's pissy beer.
John has no one to talk to at mealtimes, as he sits with the scholars and Christopher sits with the commoners. Eventually, another scholar called Whitbread speaks to him.
Noisy crowd down there.
I beg your pardon?
Regular bad set down there.
Oh, I share rooms with Warner.
Do you? It's a bit of bad luck. Can't you ask the Dean to move you?
He's all right when you get to know him.
A fellow like that does no good to himself or anyone else. You have to choose your friends in this place.
I hardly chose Warner.
Of course not. But if you take my advice, you'll let him know where he stands. Can't have him mucking up your work.
The affair of the tea things begins to fade from John's memory, falling into perspective as one of the harmless things Christopher does without thinking. He has never seen a person so free from care.
Where are you going?
Freshman sermon.
What?
Master says he hopes every freshman will attend.
Hopeful type.
Well, don't you think people will go?
I shan't.
Oh.
John sits back down and gets out his notes.
Cute file, that.
Do you like it?
Very cute. Are you getting a line on that stuff? Can I look when you're finished?
Yes, of course.
But when John comes back from the stationer's with another file, Christopher seems to have forgotten all about it.
For me?
You said you liked it.
Yeah, I haven't any change now.
Oh, no,
I'll pay you tonight.
No, really.
Yeah, see you later.
John feels a sudden chill, as though a door has swung open and revealed his loneliness waiting for him. He goes to the library. When he goes back to his room, fully intending to work until bedtime, he finds Christopher at home and Patrick Dowling sitting in an armchair.
Dreadful little man. Now, what was his name? Bradshaw?
Brannigan?
There are bottles of beer on the table.
Hello.
Oh, Kemp, there you are. You remember Patrick?
Yes.
We're having a quiet evening in. Patrick's got some beer from the buttery. We need an opener.
I signed your name for the beer.
You are bloody mean.
Are you overdrawn again?
Opener! We need an opener!
I've got one. Here.
Good man. I know. It was Braithwaite.
Tony Braithwaite?
Rotten little rat. 4 or 5 of us once called round on him after lights out. We kept it up. We were going to castrate him. Never seen a man so white. Absolutely as white as paper.
You were always a man for night work.
Oh, yes. Those were the days.
John sits listening to their stories, trying to imagine himself set down in this savage boarding school life. He watches them with a curious respect, as if they were veterans of an old war.
Do you remember when Potty Hurst brought that white rabbit in? The thing just sat in the middle of the floor, too scared to budge.
It had good reason, considering what you did to it.
John regrets that he and Christopher don't spend more time together. After their first tutorial, he suggests, timidly, that they should walk around the gardens, but Christopher says abruptly that he is meeting some people. It is this regret that comes first to John's mind when his tutor asks to see him.
Do sit down, Mr. Kemp.
Th-
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask you if you'd prefer me to take you alone.
Alone?
Instead of with Mr. Warner.
No, I don't think so, sir.
Are you sure?
Yes, sir.
You don't feel the present arrangement hinders you in any way?
Oh, no, sir.
Well, it wouldn't be any trouble. Well, that's all I wanted to say.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Kemp? What was all that about?
He asked me if I'd like to have my tutorials alone.
I hope you put a stopper on that.
I did, yes.
Yeah, good show. I suppose he thinks that if he gets us alone, he can screw more work out of us.
Yes.
What about a drink?
Where?
Somewhere out. It doesn't matter if you're busy.
Oh, but of course, yes.
Let's go to the Bull, shall we?
Two bitters, please.
Right you are.
Do the proctors come in here?
They don't bother about the little place as much.
It's a little place.
Fairly, but you see it's early yet. I say, are you getting a line on the essay?
I think so.
Can I have a look at it when you're finished?
Of course.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you.
That's better.
Yes.
Beer's a bit pissy, isn't it?
Mm. I expect you drank a good deal at school.
It wasn't easy, but there are ways.
There you are, you elusive bastard.
Patrick!
Hello. Come down to the King's Head. Guess who's there?
Who?
Brian Kenderdine. Drink up.
Hang on, damn. I've got no real money. Can you see me through?
No can do. I've only got 15 bob till I get to the bank.
John, old man, you haven't a quid handy, have you?
Of course.
That's white of you. You'll get it back tomorrow. Right. Thanks, John.
See you around, Kemp.
John tells himself Christopher will pay back his pound out of sheer courtesy. It is the second of five he has to last him through the term. The next day, when Christopher makes no mention of it, he tries to tell himself that this casualness is a sign of friendship. On Saturday morning, he gives up hope and draws out another pound from his post office account.
Oh, thank God you're here. You doing anything this afternoon?
No.
This is from my mother. It says meet 3:45 train for tea. Well, I've got a match. I can't cut it. Will you go for me?
But I don't know her.
Look, there's her photograph. Just explain and apologise.
But
Elizabeth and Patrick have gone off up to Banbury to visit some cousin. You're the only person I can ask.
But what shall I do with her?
Good man. Take her to the Greenleaf. I'll meet you there at 4:30.
So how do you know Christopher?
We share rooms.
Do you really?
Yes.
He never told me that. How odd of him, don't you think?
I suppose.
I don't suppose you've settled down yet. You're North Country.
Yes, Huddersfield.
I've never been further north than Crewe.
Well, I've never been further south than Crewe.
And what do you think of us now you've crossed the border?
I don't know. The people, I don't know. They're so sure of themselves.
Perhaps they've only got smoother tongues. Oh, look, here's Christopher.
Hello, Mother.
Perhaps
what
I should...
What a mess you look.
Ah, we won!
Do sit down, boys, and order some tea. Order everything you can think of. What is there? We'll have everything. And tea. Do you like China tea, John?
Oh, yes.
China tea, then. This reminds me of when I used to take Christopher and his friends out to tea. I used to order the most lavish banquets. But you know, they'd hardly eat anything. Why was that?
They were just shy. You used to frighten them.
Frighten them? Pooh. I've got to powder my nose.
How's it going?
Oh, I think your mother's awfully decent.
Huh?
The following morning, John goes out shopping.
What have you bought?
A bow tie.
I thought you looked different. Let me see. Cute thing.
Oh, thanks.
There.
Hey, you've undone it.
I'm pretty smart.
You are a swine.
Look, keep a good fire in, will you? Elizabeth's coming to tea.
All right.
I'm going to the library. Got to have a stab at that essay. White of you to lend me your notes.
John sits down at his desk, an open book in front of him. He runs his eye down the page, meaning to gather the main points. But in a couple of seconds he has lost track of the meaning. He has to force himself to go back and read every word. He has lost the habit of work.
Oh dear. Am I early?
Hello.
John, isn't it? Do you remember me? Patrick's sister?
Yes, of course. May I take your coat?
Thanks. I say, what a heavenly bow tie.
Oh, I've just bought it.
Why haven't you tied it properly?
It was tied, but I don't know how. The man in the shop did it.
You are mad. I'll show you. Turn around and look in the mirror. Can you see what I'm doing?
Yes.
The right end should be longer than the left. There. It's just like tying a shoelace. First an ordinary knot.
He wants to raise his hands and put them on her hips and pull her towards him. His elbows are beginning to crook when he sees the expression on her face. She expects him to do this. She is waiting for it.
Keep still. Now the bow.
A horrible embarrassment shudders inside him, that what he imagines to be his most secret feeling is so obvious.
There. It's done.
Very nice, thank you.
It's easy. Christopher!
Hello.
So where have you been?
Buying cakes for you to stuff.
Beast.
I'd better be going. I'm late.
Bye then.
Goodbye, John.
Bye.
As he goes, the door does not close properly. He turns back to shut it.
You've trained him well.
Yes.
Quite a little gent. Is this still his china?
Yes. That's his butter.
You are a horror.
Too bad.
He must be a feeble sort of worm.
Your mother said he looked stuffed.
Stuffed? That's just the word.
As he walks out past the porter's lodge, John feels as if he has been knocked about by a boxer who knows exactly where to hit him in order to hurt him most.
Letter for you, sir.
Oh.
The letter is from his older sister, Edith, who works as a teacher in Manchester. He takes it without reading it.
Thank you.
He can't understand why this has all happened. This is how he now remembers the conversation.
Of course I use all his Crocs.
Chris, you are awful.
That's his butter. Spread it on thick.
Oh, Chris!
Your mother thought he was a scared, stuffed little rabbit.
He must be a pretty miserable specimen.
Why have they been so deceitful? Or why has he been so obtuse? It is surely not his fault. But he does not expect the rage that flares inside him when he returns to their room to find Christopher sprawled on the sofa.
Been anywhere?
No.
Got a letter?
It's from my sister.
Oh, I didn't know you had one. She older than you? Oh, pardon me.
No, she's younger.
I've got two myself. But they're older than me.
Jill's only 15.
At home, is she?
No, she's away at school.
Something in John's tone makes Christopher glance at him. To his surprise, John is looking at him too.
I don't see much of mine. Are you much alike?
We have the same kind of hair. That's all. And I suppose she's clever.
Bore?
I don't know. It means we can talk. Jill's fond of poetry. She's very sensitive. She's got a great friend at school. Patsy. Patsy Hammond. They were really awfully thick. Then a year ago, she went back to school and found out that Patsy had gone to America with her people. She was awfully cut up.
Where did you say she was?
Derbyshire. Willow Gables. It's not very big.
And my sisters were at a place near Beckenham. That's queer. You should have kept up with yours. I never did. We're a pretty rackety family.
John sees with amazement that he has said something that makes Christopher envious of him.
I owe you a quid, don't I?
Yes.
I've got about 7 and 6 here. Will that do to be going on with?
Thank you.
Jumping Jesus, my essay. I never finished it.
Mine's on the desk.
Oh, that's awfully white of you. Thanks, old man.
John is astonished, both at his lies about his imaginary younger sister and their effect. He goes to bed early, and lying wakeful in the dark, Jill comes into his mind. He imagines her playing the piano in a house where they both live, a big house with gardens. He is on the lawn. The sun is so low in the sky that it only catches the attic windows. The sound of Jill's playing comes out of a large downstairs room where the windows are open. He walks towards them. He can see her sitting at the piano, dressed in white. The next morning, he has the idea that if he leaves a letter from Jill lying about, Christopher might surreptitiously read it, and his hold over Christopher, if it really exists, will thereby increase. He takes his sister Edith's letter out of its envelope, reads it, and burns it. Then he settles himself at his desk, working intently, like an etcher or a forger.
Dear John, you said you would write to me, but of course you haven't. You never do. So I'm writing to you instead. So mind you answer. How are you getting on? Tell me everything about your college and the rooms you have. I long to know all. I really haven't any news for you. This place is as usual. Need I say more? Much love, Jill. P.S. We're going to some incredible concert thing in Manchester, so I should post this there. P.P.S. It's raining. No hockey.
He has just finished this letter when he hears Christopher stirring in the bedroom. He stuffs it into the original envelope, puts it on the mantelpiece, and strolls out. Later, when he sees it has been moved, he can't decide whether Chris looked at it or whether someone has dusted the mantelpiece. Whitbread asks him to coffee after lunch.
It's just gutter snipe hooliganism, that's all it is.
What is?
Haven't you heard? Warner.
I've hardly seen him today. What's he done?
You know Semple lives next door to Dowling?
Yes.
Last night, Warner and Dowling came in a bit tiddly, and Semple's suddenly woken up by this tremendous crash. He gets up and finds Warner and Dowling in his sitting room. And when he asks them what they're up to, Warner knocks him down. It's just rank hooliganism, that's all.
I was hungry. The room was in darkness, so I concluded that the man was either out or asleep. I prepared to investigate his cupboard, pulled at the door in a sober and sensible way, and the whole bloody thing came toppling over. And so as luck would have it, the man was in bed. He comes out and bursts into a torrent of insults, and after a while I began to take offence. So I slapped his face. I just caught the edge of his spectacles and they went flying. Came at me like a bloody tiger. We sparred for an opening and I hit him in the eye. That's the whole story. Tutorial tomorrow?
Yes.
Where's your essay?
I haven't done it.
What?
I haven't touched it. Sorry. You could cut tomorrow.
Can I, hell?
Can't you hash up something, then?
Now, look here, Kemp. This isn't good enough, ratting like this.
All right. Give me time. If I work, I can have it done by 10.
All right. That's damn late.
All right.
He has no means of retaliation. Only Jill.
I've just got to write to my sister first.
What?
Nothing.
Dear Jill, thank you for your letter. I haven't got used to the fact that I'm really and truly here. Fortunately, I haven't had any difficulty making friends. The very first afternoon I got here, I found an abortive tea party hanging about in my rooms. My roommate, Chris Warner, and a brother and sister called Dowling. She's attractive in a cheap kind of way. They didn't really know where to go and they had no crocs, so I was able to play Lord Bountiful and unpack all my new stuff.
10 o'clock, yes? Kemp?
Yes, all right.
Yeah. I might cut it anyway.
John spends the next few days writing letters to Jill. Her image grows clearer in his mind. She is not his sister anymore. She is called Jill Bradley. He spends hours writing the letters, but he is not content. He begins writing about her in the third person, a kind of story to build her up. It's easy. He finds his invention puts out more flowers than he expected.
Hello, Jill.
Hello, Maisie. Decent Christmas?
Tolerable, thanks.
Have you seen Patsy Hammond?
No. I haven't.
Patsy was Jill's only friend. Together they had formed an alliance against the rest of the world. And now Patsy could not be found.
Joan? I say Joan.
Hello, Jill. Decent halls?
Scrumptious, thanks. I say, Joan, you haven't seen Patsy, have you?
Patsy Hammond? Is she coming back?
What?
Well, matrons seem to think not.
I say, matron. Hello, Jill. How are you?
Matron? I say, matron.
Just a minute, Ruth.
Honestly, Ruth.
Is Patsy Hammond coming back? Why, no. Her father's gone to America, and the whole family's gone with him. I thought you two were great pals. Didn't she tell you?
No. Sick transit, a beautiful friendship.
Ruth, may I help you?
Oh, matron, my medicine's all smashed in my trunk. It's gone everywhere. Absolutely ghastly.
Don't run in the corridors.
Sorry, Minerva.
Sorry. Now Patsy had gone, Jill felt quite alone. And this was when she first noticed Minerva Strachey.
Minerva Strachey? Oh yes, toujours the lone wolf.
And one day Jill had bad news from home. She went to the library to cry, thinking she would have it to herself. But Minerva was there.
Anything the matter?
My father's ill. Very ill.
I'm sorry. If there's anything I can do...
Thanks. No, it's just all very unexpected.
I'm sorry. I'm sure he'll get better.
It's just having to be stuck in this awful place.
Don't you like school?
No.
Have you no friends?
No.
Not one?
Not a real one. What am I going to do?
Stick it out. Things will get better. Look here. Have some chocolate.
When John reads this through the next day, he is disappointed that it is so little of what he desired. It seems to present nothing of the Jill he knew. Thinking that it lacks intimacy, he tries to write a diary, concocting entries for Jill day by day.
Sunday. Got told off today. And really, nobody seems to think I should get my school cert. I don't, myself. Monday. Delia's kept on at me. She's noticed I spend ages in the lats every night. Writing this, of course, but she won't believe that. And goes about telling everyone. I wish this place were burnt to the ground and everyone in it. Tuesday. Queer thing happened today. Miss Fairfax had a class of babes to look after, and she told me to go in and read to them. I was so surprised that I was hardly nervous at all. I read them a fairy story and put loads of expression into it so that they were quite thrilled. I felt a horrid pang for my lost youth. But really, I'm not sorry at all. I mean, I know things will get worse, but I don't mind because they'll get better and better too. I wouldn't go back, not for millions.
But suddenly the whole thing seems vapid and uninteresting. He has not moved one inch nearer to creating an independent Jill. He can't coax a picture of her to materialise. Then, at dinner, the possession comes. He sits spellbound. The sensation he has is of looking intently into the centre of a pure white light. He seems to see the essence of Jill. He sees exactly what she is and how he shall express it.
Innocent.
The word is...
innocent.
He has used it dozens of times and never till that moment understood it. He hurries back to his room to write.
Kemp!
Oh, Whitbread, hello. I've just...
Don't rush off. I haven't seen you. Where have you been? You cut in lectures. You've not been in the library.
I've been working in my room.
Well, I suppose there's a place for everything if you want it. That's what I like about our college. There's a place for everything.
Yes, well, I must just...
My dad was always saying that if I got to college, I'd have no friends. Everyone would look down on me. But I told him I knew I'd find some decent fellows. Look, like yourself now. All over the country, there are fellas like me trying to better themselves, but he wouldn't have it. Said they'd all be eaten and la-di-da.
Well, Warner is.
Warner? He's nobody.
He's rich enough.
Is he? He cadges a good deal. Oh, I've got no time for his sort. It's not as if he were any real class, him and his actress mother.
Is she an actress?
Was at one time.
Well, look, I've really got to dash.
Oh, hi.
When he finally gets back to his room, The extraordinary clarity of perception that had been vouchsafed him has utterly gone. He puts away Jill's diary and goes out. Wandering the streets, he is seized with a pang of absolute disgust. On a whim, he pushes open the doors of a bookshop. He moves from shelf to shelf. His glance wanders down the aisle where he is standing, and he receives a shock that could not have been greater if a brick had been thrown through the shop window. He sees Jill.
Excuse me.
Sorry.
The resemblance is so exact that for a second he can't remember who it is, this over-familiar face. He stands staring at her.
Haven't we met before somewhere?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, then I'm sorry.
I'm sure I don't know you.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
The sight of her awkward girl's body afflicts him with a fearful longing. But she is drifting away. She goes to the door and pulls it open. He follows. She crosses the road to a cycle rack, unlocks her bike and scoots away northwards in the dusk. He automatically runs after her, fully 300 yards up the Banbury Road, until she is out of sight.
What am I going to do?
The next day after breakfast, he strolls nervously out into town. He feels like a detective. He makes his way up the Banbury Road and around the straggling, peaceful area of North Oxford. Despite the knowledge that he is wasting time and money, he spends the next day in this manner, and the one after that. Then in the afternoon, he and Whitbread are invited to tea at the Dean's house. They set off from college together.
The Dean only asks scholars to these little do's. It gives you a chance to make a good impression.
I don't really know him.
Oh, he's okay. You'll have to show him you're not tarred with the same brush as that fella Warner. Dean's had a bit of trouble with him already. I don't know what he comes up here for. If it's just drink and women Warner wants, he might as well stay in London. After all, he hasn't got to earn a living.
Not that he'd get one.
Ah, there's the house. Not bad, is it?
As they reach it, Jill cycles slowly by, one hand in the pocket of her loosely belted coat. John is paralysed.
Shall I ring? Kemp? Kemp! What's the matter with you? Come on!
What?
Come on.
Yes, sorry.
The following day, a Sunday, he stays in. He sits in the junior common room turning over a Sunday newspaper when Christopher and Patrick walk in.
2 quid? What is the man talking about?
The 2 quid you owe me.
I don't owe you 2 quid.
Oh, yes, you do.
You're a liar.
I lent them you the day before we left London.
I don't remember.
I'm not surprised. You were as boozed as hell. Anyway, it's down here if you want to see it.
I don't want to see your damn little black book. I can't pay you all of it. Will a quid do?
For the moment. Hello, Kemp.
Hello.
Oh, God, don't tell me I owe you something, too.
Don't need
here. Take that to be going on with.
That's all right, if you're sure.
Take it!
No, it's quite all right.
What the hell do you mean? Take it. I don't want you to give me money.
When you've lived as long as I have, you won't want to pay men who don't want to be paid. Your fine sense of honour will have become dulled.
John pockets the money. Then he goes, overwhelmingly conscious that Jill and all she represents must be kept away from Christopher. He is absolutely at a loss to remember why he had ever mentioned her name at all. For 2 days, John sees nothing of Jill, and prepares himself for the realisation that she is gone forever. Christopher saunters into their room after lunch and prepares to shave.
My barber tells me that the secret of shaving is to lather for 8 minutes.
I thought you shaved yesterday.
True.
Then what are you shaving today for?
I did shave yesterday, I did indeed, and for a very good reason. I went to tea with Elizabeth.
Oh, and today?
Today, Elizabeth is coming to tea with me.
Oh, well, have a good time.
I shall indeed. Unless I'm mistaken, we shall be having the ne plus ultra of good times, unless I'm very much mistaken. Of course, if it weren't the first time, I shouldn't be taking all this trouble.
The first time?
Well, the first time with Elizabeth. Well, that surprises you, does it?
Well,
No, no. The first time. You know, girls are queer about that sort of thing, as you'll find out, my lad.
Then, how do you know that...
Well, I don't know. It'll be all right, she'll come up to scratch.
But as she said...
Well, one doesn't say everything in this life. There are some things that don't need saying. In fact, there are some things it's definitely advisable not to say. If I asked her, she'd say no. Of course, it's possible she'll jib. There's something a bit odd about her and Patrick. Did I tell you Patrick suddenly turned Catholic? Mm. That was very odd. And Elizabeth, she had a terrific purity ramp at one time when I first knew her. Wouldn't think of it to look at her, would you?
No. I'd better go out then.
Well, in the circumstances, old man, I think your presence might be a drag on the conversation.
I'll go.
Well, there's no need to go yet.
Well, that's all right.
John walks out of college. He walks for a long time before he can come to grips with his perturbation. What shocks him is the enormous disparity between his imagination and what actually happens. He thinks of Christopher, legs straddled, hands steadily working the razor.
Unless I'm mistaken, we shall be having the ne plus ultra of good times. Unless I'm very much mistaken.
He knows that he himself could never sustain that position. He would turn and run long before it came. If this is what his quest for Jill is leading to, he will give it up without a second thought. And then, in St. Giles, in the general crush around a bus stop, he sees her. Jill! He follows her, but she is not going towards the shops. She is heading, rather, towards the quieter precincts of some colleges. When she leads him under the walls of his own college, his astonishment begins to curdle. When she goes into the porter's lodge... He runs.
Staircase 14, on the right-hand side. You can't miss it.
Thank you.
Where's she going?
Oh, to your room, sir.
My room? My room? Does she want me?
Couldn't say, sir.
Well, she can't go there. She can't.
No. John.
Hello, old chap. Wasn't expecting you in.
I thought you...
Gillian, this is my better half, John Kemp.
How do you do?
Pleased to...
And you remember Patrick and Elizabeth?
Of course he does.
Gillian is our cousin.
Oh, I see.
There'll be tea in a minute, if you can find a cup. Gillian, I'm sorry to say there's not a frightful lot to eat. Elizabeth should have given me some warning.
Oh, I don't mind.
I could get a cake.
Where from?
Whitbread.
Who's Whitbread?
It's someone, a neighbour. Whitbread?
Yes? Oh, what do you want?
I want to borrow your cake, have a tea party. I wasn't expecting, it's all a bit sudden. It was going to be, I mean, I thought...
Well, I don't know.
You don't need it today, do you? I'll get you another tomorrow, I promise.
Is this to do with Warner? You know I don't think...
No, just me. Thanks awfully much.
Well, I don't know...
Thanks!
That was quick.
Here, cake.
You old pirate. Now Gillian can be fed.
Don't give me that much.
You can give me some. Is it good?
Mm-mm. You're giving me far too much. I've had one tea already. She doesn't know I'm having tea here.
Who doesn't?
My aunt.
Aunt Charlotte is a bit strict. She thinks Gillian and I are going to the theatre alone. If she knew Patrick and Christopher were coming along, she'd have kittens.
You're going to the theatre?
Most afternoons she has to read East Lynne to the old girl. It's not so bad.
Let's go and give Aunt Charlotte a jolly up.
A few carols.
Don't be idiotic. Get Gillian's coat, Christopher. You might behave like a gentleman, even if you aren't one.
Oh, good one.
No cake for you.
Is this your coat?
Yes, thank you.
Why not?
Yes. I hope you enjoy the play.
Do you know it?
No. I wish I was coming with you.
Aren't you?
Come on, everyone.
Thanks for the cake. Pity Guy Fawkes' night's over.
We could put a rocket under Aunt Charlotte.
Don't be an ass.
When they have gone, he puts his head in his hands. The thought of them all laughing and enjoying themselves together causes him acute suffering. He sits up waiting for Christopher, listening for the sound of footsteps, but falls asleep soon after midnight. He is woken in the small hours.
Just lost 18 bob.
Lost a bet?
3 hours poker with Tom Scott and Max and that fool Patrick. Swine won 18 bob and then started crabbing about giving me a lousy cigarette.
Then you've been in college?
Ever since they closed, yes.
But what happened to the girls?
Oh, Elizabeth rushed off with her kid after the show. I'm getting sick of Elizabeth.
You mean this afternoon?
Everything was mucked up by that blasted little cousin of hers.
How was that?
Elizabeth had a couple of free seats. She got them ages ago, then this old bitch of an aunt got to know this morning and says she must take Gillian. So the whole thing turns into a family party. Properly bitched up.
And you didn't get a chance to pop the question.
Tell you something. Elizabeth turned all standoffish again. She's gone all motherly and protective over this little fool, Gillian. Christ, perhaps I won't knock it out of her when we get back up to London. Put the light out, will you? I can't be bothered.
Next day, wandering the streets at lunchtime, he looks into the Bull and sees Patrick at the bar.
Good morning.
How do? How's Chris?
Oh.
He really is a shocking loser. Hmm. Are you seeing him today? Elizabeth sent me a message for him. It was to me, really, but Chris would do as well. Will he go and tell Cousin Gillian that Elizabeth can't meet her for tea? She's ill or something. And they were going to the Greenleaf.
All right. How long is she staying?
How long is who staying?
Gillian. What's her second name?
Oh, you're not thinking of starting anything, are you? Elizabeth would eat you.
What's it got to do with her? Anyway, I wasn't.
Don't be a fool, damn baby snatcher. Mind you, here's your chance.
I never said anything.
I saw you giving her the once over at tea yesterday, foam fairly dripping from your jaws. Here's your chance.
Don't play the fool.
You can have my room. What you do is you pick her up at the Greenleaf. Sorry, Elizabeth unavoidably detained, but come and have tea with me. At tea, you put in the groundwork, then you suggest walking round to see me. I'll be out. And then you can get to work. Sport the oak and go to it. Go on, man.
He cannot connect what Patrick says with any desire of his own. Yet he knows it's a chance for all that. It is incredible to him that his secret should be given up so easily.
Oh, hello. Gosh, isn't the weather foul? Are you having tea here too?
Well, look, as a matter of fact, I was looking for you. Elizabeth is ill or something. She can't come.
Oh dear, what, really ill?
I'm sorry, she just sent a message.
Thank you for telling me.
Will you have tea with me?
Oh, I don't think I will, thanks. I must go back.
Oh, please do. It's only 3:30.
I don't think I'd better, thanks. I'd better go back.
Don't go.
What?
I wanted to say, it's the strangest thing. Before I met you, you remember the first time I asked you if we hadn't met before?
We hadn't.
Well, I knew you, you see.
What?
I mean, your face was familiar. Long before I saw you, I knew who you were.
Do you mean
No,
Elizabeth?
I mean, I knew your name was Jill.
It's not Jill. It's Gillian. No one calls me Jill.
Sorry. Look, it all sounds so silly, but I had a letter from my sister.
I must get the bus.
Look,
now.
I must tell you all this properly. Come and have tea with me tomorrow.
I must go now. Goodbye.
Will you come about 4?
What? Yes, all right. Goodbye.
The next morning, he watches Christopher's face very carefully to see if Patrick has spread the ribald news. But Christopher makes no reference to Jill's promised visit.
Where are my togs? Got a match with the Col 15 this afternoon.
Who are you playing?
RAF crowd.
Oh, good luck.
Ah, thanks.
He buys fruit tarts, a jam roll, a sponge cake. He tidies the room. He spends some time in front of the bedroom mirror with a comb. He lays a tablecloth and the food.
She's going to come. I must get away. I must get away before she comes.
But he does want her to come. Hysteria seizes him.
Come in.
Hello, John.
Elizabeth.
I just wanted to talk to you a moment. Gillian said you asked her to tea.
Yes.
Well, I think it would be better if she didn't come. You see, her people are really awfully strict and would be very annoyed if they found out. I thought you knew all that.
But she said
she's only a kid.
She probably didn't want to hurt your feelings. Really, you ought to have known.
I'm sorry.
When she told me, I thought it was some kind of joke. But even if it isn't, I'm afraid it's not possible for her to come. I should have thought you'd have guessed that.
I'm sorry.
Yes. That's all right, then. Goodbye.
Has she gone?
Patrick?
Bad luck, old man. Did she take your pants down and smack your bottom? What did she say?
I should have got her out of the way for you, really. I should have fixed everything. I say, let's have some sponge cake.
Oh, yeah, here.
Thanks. And she said she was ill. Not too ill, it seems. This is jolly good. Jolly decent cake. You know, it pains me to say this, but my sister is one hell of a bitch. Still, it was a sound attempt. Better luck next time.
We must
try it again. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could get Gillian right from under her nose? Are you going to put the kettle on? Dear me, are you all right?
Dear me.
The lengthening of time only increases the pain he feels. His room has become loathsome to him. But at night he must go back there.
Hello.
Hello.
How's Trix? Care for a drink?
Oh, thanks. Mm.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Yeah, I've got these Cuban cigarettes. Got them from the George. I'll knock you back. Go on, have one. They're soaked in molasses.
Thanks.
I gave Elizabeth one this afternoon. It nearly did for her. I say, you got across her, didn't you?
Yes, I suppose I did.
I told you how it'd be. She's an angel with a flaming ruddy sword. Of course, she wants to keep in with the aunt, you see. Old woman's got pots of cash. You should see her when she goes to tea there, all dressed up like Mother Superior. Butter wouldn't melt. Christ.
I thought there was something.
You bet there is. I say, you don't mind, do you? I mean, it would have been a damn good joke. As long as you weren't serious.
Lord, no. It was only a passing thought.
Well, it would have been a damn good joke. Elizabeth's such a rotten hypocrite. Yeah, we ought to have worked it better, planned it beforehand properly.
I suppose she'll be going away soon.
Gillian? As a matter of fact, she's gone for the weekend. But she'll be back next week. Till the end of term. I owe you some money, don't I?
8 shillings.
As much as that? Mm. Crikey. Will you take 5 and another drink?
All right.
A few days later, he is sitting in a cafe when he sees Elizabeth sitting at another table with some girlfriends. He watches her, the way she talks, the way she listens, as if she were part of a comedy. She reminds him of Jill, who he does not expect to see again.
John? Hello?
Hello.
May I?
Yeah, of course.
Look, there's something I wanted to say. I hope you aren't too much offended about the other day. I must have seemed a bit rude, was I?
A bit, perhaps, but not very, considering.
I'm sure I was. I do want to apologise. I didn't mean to be nasty. It's only that... Gillian, it's only that she's just a kid. She's so young.
Yes.
And she didn't really want to... You know... She asked me to... Well... You see how it was.
That's quite all right.
Are you sure? Well, as long as you aren't nursing a grievance or anything.
No, that's quite all right. I understand.
Good. I must fly now. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bitch. Bloody bitch. He goes back to his room and makes a cup of tea. And then he remembers that he never gave Whitbread another cake. He goes up to Whitbread's room.
Hello?
The room is empty. He remembers Whitbread is taking an exam. One of the question papers lies on the table. He glances through it. It's meaningless to him. The realisation that Whitbread is taking an exam when his own tutor thinks so little of him that the matter has not even been mentioned makes him peculiarly angry. He takes up Whitbread's pot of jam and puts a large dollop on each of the open books lying on the desk. He puts butter into the toes of Whitbread's slippers. He fills the pockets of his jacket with sugar and tea and pours the milk into the coal scuttle. A great cheerfulness comes on him, and he saunters out into town.
Bitter, please.
Yes, sir.
He wonders where Jill is at that exact moment. He lingers over a memory.
Bitter, please.
Sir.
He begins to reconstruct her face.
Oh, this beer is pissy. Whiskey, please. Large one.
When he gets back to his room, he finds a note for Christopher lying on the table. It is from Elizabeth.
I suppose it will be all right if I bring Gillian tonight. It's her last evening and I've got saddled with her as usual. Patrick won't mind and it's his party. Ring me between 4 and 5. I'll see you at the party. Maybe we can get away. I could leave her there if people aren't too drunk.
He goes to a drawer and pulls out the folder that holds all he's written about Jill. He opens it at random.
I mean, I know things will get worse, but I don't mind, because they'll get better and better too. I wouldn't go back. Not for millions.
He pitches the folder into the fire. He goes down to the buttery.
I want a bottle. I'm going to a party.
Sherry?
Yeah, a bottle of sherry. And I'll have a glass of whiskey. Large one.
Yes, sir. Will you sign for them, please, sir?
Yes, I will. I say.
Yes?
I'm trying to find a party. Patrick, what's his name? Dowling. Patrick Dowling's room. Here, have a drink. I've got sherry.
Oh.
It's not open. Sorry.
Party? There's an unholy row in Founders Quad. They're putting someone in the fountain.
Oh, yeah.
John sits on the bottom step of the staircase to Patrick's room. Drunks go pushing past him up to the party.
Serve the little swine right.
Been begging for it ever since he came up.
A door opens above, and Jill, Elizabeth and Christopher begin to descend the staircase. John sees them and gets to his feet.
It's Kemp.
He's drunk.
As Jill comes level, he takes her gently in his arms and kisses her. Jill's face is red.
Where's my umbrella? I took my umbrella.
Hey!
The nerve!
Swine!
When Chris punches him, John falls back against the wall.
Here, chaps. Here's one for the fountain.
Righto.
Ready or not?
Come on. No!
Yes.
Gillian, come on! I'm coming.
One, two, three!
Four days later, John lies in bed in the college sick room with bronchial pneumonia. As the fever grows, his mind loses the chronology of things.
The nerve.
It would have been a damn good joke.
I wouldn't go back. Not for millions.
As his temperature rises, untruths take their place among these recollections.
Well, John, John, kiss me again.
In his dream, truth and fiction have interlocked, and he has had his way as completely as in life he has been denied it.
Oh, John.
But this dream shows that, whether fulfilled or unfulfilled, love dies.
Kiss me again. Please. John, please.
He grows confused as to whether she has accepted him or not, since the result is the same.
You little swine.
I will come. I will come to tea with you. The nerve.
There's no difference.
Kiss me.
It would have been a damn good joke.
What can it matter? Let him take this course or that course. Love dies in the end.
They both lead to the same place. The same place.
Fulfilled or unfulfilled.
Why should I choose? I don't have to.
Through the window of the sick room, he watches the treetops, flung this way and that by the wind.
Why should I choose? There's no difference. I can't choose.
The next morning, someone is sitting by his bed.
Oh, Whitbread.
Just came to say goodbye.
Are you going?
Term's ended. Everyone's going.
Oh, yes.
How are you?
All right.
Well, I'd better... Yes? What?
Nothing.
Well, see you next term.
Yes. Thanks. John slips out of bed and goes to stand at the window, watching the frigid wind tousling the clouds in the quad below. He spots Christopher. Then Elizabeth emerges from the porter's lodge. Although the day is not unduly cold, she is wearing a fur coat.
Ah, he's found us a taxi.
At last. Can we go?
Yes.
So, you're off then, sir?
That's right.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Drink my health while I'm away.
Thank you very much.
We'll leave you in peace.
You want to keep him in order, miss?
I certainly am.
Elizabeth has managed to convey to Christopher that when they get to London, she is willing to become his mistress. And as he watches from the window, John can sense this.
Time we were going.
I'm coming.
Come on, then.
In Jill, by Philip Larkin, John Kemp was played by Samuel Barnett. Christopher Warner by Richard Golding. Elizabeth Dowling by Jessica Rain. And Patrick Dowling by Frank Delane. The porter was Andrew Wincott. Minerva, Violet Taylor. Ruth, Molly Deneck. Joan, Victoria Easy. And Maisie, Cressida Sourbutts. Whitbread was played by Nigel Pilkington. Mrs. Warner by Sarah Edel. And Jill by Grace Englert. Jill by Philip Larkin was dramatised by Robin Brooks. It was directed by Fiona McAlpine and was an Allegra production for BBC Radio 4.
And at the same time next week, you can hear the final play in A Larkin Double, a dramatisation of Philip Larkin's second novel, A Girl in Winter. After the news, it's Open Book with Mariella Frostrup, and she'll be talking about how spring has inspired novelists down the ages. She'll also be talking to the author Patrick Ness, whose books for teenagers have been described as so violent they need a health warning. But today he'll be talking about his latest novel for adults, The Crane Wife, the retelling of a traditional Japanese folk story.